Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nation, it's time to roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Go. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio, the only show broadcasting live from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
From the fight capital of the world, inside the beautiful Mandalay Bay Racing Sportsbook, you are listening to the MMA Junkie Radio Show, the only show that matters. I'm your host, Gorgeous George. With me, as always, is the devious and dastardly Goes, our ace co-host and producer. Sitting to my right, he's co-hosting with us CBS Sports and the Phone Booth Fighting Podcast's very own Richard Hunter. Back he's producing, it's Andre the Giant.
Hey,
what's up?
Nothing much right now. See, my Yankees losing right now. It's terrible.
Good.
Ouch.
I don't like the Yankees. Yeah. No mercy from me.
How rude.
How you doing, Richard?
Great. How are you guys?
Good, my man.
Thanks so much for having me.
What's that sticker on your laptop? What's it say?
It's Amoeba Music. It's from the Amoeba Record Store in L.A.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yep, a real honest-to-goodness record store. You can walk in and still buy physical records. So anytime I'm in L.A., I shop
there. You're talking vinyl.
Vinyl, but they've got cassettes,
8-track?
CDs. I'll bet you there are some 8-tracks
really?
In there. Yeah.
You still have a lot of vinyl?
Yeah, a ton of it.
Well, you collect it.
I buy a lot of new vinyl, too. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that about you.
I got a whole vinyl setup over at the house. You were too busy breaking the lawn furniture.
That's
when
you were
over there to notice my vinyl collection.
That's true, yeah.
You wrecked the place, man. It took me a while to rebuild it.
Yeah, that's a funny story. That was an embarrassing moment for me. And
well, I'm glad I brought it up.
I did not let Richard I wasn't mad that he had a good laugh at it, honestly, because I would have been laughing that you were at my house and that happened. But, yeah, basically Richard invited me to his house. Yeah, let's go outside. His girlfriend was cutting my girlfriend's hair. And
outside?
No, they were inside. So we just went outside. We were having a drink or a chat or whatever. And we sit down after he just kind of shows me. He's got a big backyard. We just sit down, and I sit down on his patio furniture and break it. I just fell all the way over, yeah. And so Richard has a good laugh, and I can't blame him. I'm okay. So yeah,
was it an instant laugh, or did you play the, hey, are you okay type thing?
I think I probably laughed right away.
I think so, too.
Yeah. What I really enjoyed, I could see he was okay, but what I enjoyed was the embarrassed, like, because it's fine. I wasn't upset or anything, you know, but just seeing, because I know how I would have reacted the same way you did if I were you, which is, oh, my God, I can't believe that just happened, you know?
Yeah.
But the saddest part was the reaction of your brother, though, because when he found out about it, it was like, I just get this text, I need pictures immediately. He wanted to see the picture of the demolished chair.
Yeah, I remember that.
Well, because I needed to know.
I'm just waiting for him to give me some sort of a feel-good moment, like, oh, yeah, those break all the time, or you can't trust that maker. You know, anything that just lets me off
I
the hook.
I think there's a recall
for being
on that.
A big, fat dude that broke his chair.
So was it – what I wanted to know was it plastic? Because if it was, like, iron or something –
No, it wasn't iron.
George, you got –
What was it, Richard? Like, I don't know.
It was plastic or resin or whatever they make. Though, you know, it's like,
and you had just bought it or had been around for a while.
No, it had been out. Like if I were really telling the honest story, it'd been sitting out there.
Yeah,
100
degree heat. It was.
Yeah,
okay.
It wasn't its most stable day, but
I think I would have been able to karate chop it if I'm being honest.
Yeah,
was one of those.
No, I don't know. I'm just trying to sell it here. I really don't remember just because I really don't have a good memory, but I don't think I knew it wasn't steel or iron or whatever. Oh. So you just went to
Big Lots and got another one, or what?
I tell you what, though, I did replace it with some wrought iron furniture. So if you want to come over and test that out,
okay, all right.
These always, I don't
What's
like
What's going
these.
On there? Is that the Cub Swanson thing?
That's a Cub Swanson thing. Okay. These creak a lot, and I always feel like one day I'm going to make it break.
One of those is missing the supporting bar, but I still don't feel like that's the difference maker if the thing's going to break or not.
Yeah.
But
I feel like one day somebody's going to break one of these.
Yeah?
Yeah, sitting on it. Because they just, I don't know, they creak a lot.
So that's an In-N-Out double-double inside of a tortilla?
It's an In-N-Out double-double. With it's Cub Swanson style, so he adds cheese, guacamole, and he adds Parmesan cheese. I didn't do that, but and grilled onions.
He told us that on the show,
and he did it.
Yeah, and then after his fight, we had him on the show pre-fight. Mm-hmm. He just fought Shane Burgos, and then he went ahead and tweeted that he decided to do what he told us about, and that's he goes to In-N-Out, buys the double double, and then I guess chops it up. Adds a few things and puts it in a tortilla and eats it as a taco.
He does it himself.
He does it himself.
Okay, because otherwise, so
yeah, it's not on
the
secret
have
menu.
That conversation at the drive-thru.
No,
no, but you know what he does do. The way this came up was the last time he told us when he goes to In-N-Out.
Yeah,
he has a little baggie that he brings from home that has bacon, cheese, jalapenos, and then he pulls it out and adds it to his In-N-Out burger. There. Oh.
Yeah,
like, he doesn't even take it home. He does it there and then eats it. And this was his new concoction.
Well, my question is, what are you waiting for?
Well, I didn't want to just be weird and start eating something weird.
You bought it, what, an hour ago? Is it still warm? Did you heat it up at all anywhere or what?
It's all right, yeah. It's still somewhat warm.
All right, so what are the ingredients? I see a tortilla, flour tortilla.
Double-double, tortilla, cheese, guacamole, tomato, and I think that's it, man. And grilled onions.
Have at it.
I don't want it.
No?
It kind of looks okay, huh?
Yeah, it does look pretty good.
Do you want to try it? It's got a lot of poison for you.
Yeah, you said onions it's got, right?
Yeah.
Okay, then I'm out. All right, today we have Richard Hunter here, who's co-hosting the whole show. And we'll also talk to Eve Edwards in the first hour, 8:40 p.m. Eastern, 5:40 p.m. Pacific. Call in and participate in the show at any point in time, 877-FIGHT-93, 877-344-4893. You can hit us up on Twitter, at MMA on SiriusXM. And right now, we're having a little fun out of the gate. If you'll notice on the front page of MMA Junkie, Cub Swanson actually tweeted that he had this, and our editorial caught that. And so they made a blue corner post out of it. And I think they either dared Goz or Goz said that he wanted to follow it up. And that's what Goz is doing right now.
Well, Goz? It's not as pretty as his, but it looks good.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's actually pretty good.
Really?
Yeah, it's not bad.
Huh.
If you can do it with your ingredients, like the way you like it, I think you would actually like it.
Is it so good that I can't wait to get home to just throw the bread and get out of here and get to the concoction and figuring it out?
Maybe.
Is it that good?
Maybe. It's pretty good.
Now, what was I reading? As you were sharing the story and the editors were sharing it back, didn't one of the guys say, if you basically break down any good meal that you have, put all the ingredients in a tortilla, it just works? And I guess there's some food trucks in L.A. that subscribe to that. They just throw anything in a tortilla and it tastes good. And Did you read that part? And
yeah.
I started thinking about it. Well, yeah, I guess that's really – I guess that kind of makes sense.
Well, maybe you couldn't put spaghetti in a taco, right?
No.
That'd be silly. But
right.
For the most part, I think so.
I can't think of anything I wouldn't enjoy wrapped in a tortilla off the top of my head.
Beef jerky would be stupid.
Right. No, I'm talking about like your favorite – protein, and so you do away with the carb,
hot
but
dog?
Your cheeses, your protein, your sauces, your veggies, or whatever else that would go in there, any mixture of it. How about a chili dog from Der Wiener Schnitzel?
In a tortilla?
Yeah, you just throw the bread away and you put it in a tortilla. Do you think that would taste good?
No, I don't
think I don't think it would taste bad.
I don't think it would taste bad, but you would feel like you're missing, because those certain types of meals go with situations.
Right.
Like you're at a baseball park or you're watching a game or something like
okay.
that.
Well, I don't know.
you're driving home from Wiener Schnitzel.
Well, people are putting sushi in tacos as well.
That's going too far.
Think so?
I think so.
With a good sauce, if you're hungry, and a nice cold drink, what's so bad about it?
I don't think you can do it. Hmm. That, trust me. Okay, maybe I'm wrong, because I did think this was going to be disgusting, and this was really good.
Okay. Yeah. Are you impressed?
Yeah, I'm down for experimental food concoctions. Yeah. I mean, you know, I got my vegan limitation, so I gotta work around that. But I'm a fan of the tortilla. I'll own up to that. I mean,
flour or corn?
Flour. Mm. I mean, I'll eat both, but I prefer the flour. But I'll tell you what, I'll own up to sometimes I'll just take a tortilla, put some vegan butter on it, heat that up, and eat that like a roll.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah, it's good for me.
What do you miss the most?
Nothing. You mean about being vegan?
Yeah.
Honestly, nothing.
Right, what about in the beginning?
How many years are we celebrating here?
5 years about.
Oh, you had a burger up to vegan. 5 years ago?
No, I was a vegetarian before that.
Okay, so, before that?
But full vegan, 5 years. Vegetarian, probably 10, 15 years before that.
But I was going to say, I met you at least 5 years ago.
Yeah,
I didn't know that we could have shared a burger.
Yeah, no.
At that point.
But to answer Joseph's
By that, he would have had his own burger and me too. We wouldn't have been going back and forth sharing one burger.
Yeah, not like when we go get malts and we just do the right, two straws.
And then.
Yeah. honestly, nothing, because as soon as I became vegan, I learned all about vegan cooking and how to make vegan cakes and pizza. And like, that's what I would have missed, because I love pizza, like with cheese on it, things like that, and meat and birthday cake. And I learned how to make both of those things. So I have like sausage, pizza, no problem now, birthday cakes, all that kind of stuff. But vegan versions.
You're reminding me of a podcast I recently caught.
I hope it was mine. No?
No, because they talked about...
Did you unsubscribe?
Something to do in L.A.
Yeah.
And finally, vegan food is on point.
Okay.
Where did I hear that?
It was a thing that was going on Facebook. It was a story. I don't think it was a...
No, I thought it was someone I knew. I know I listen to you guys. I listen to Chael. I listen to Rogan from time to time. Ben's. Just trying to put it together. But somebody said, maybe Brendan. I don't know. Somebody said, finally, vegan food is on point.
Oh, burgers,
it
right?
It might be Luke Thomas, because Luke Thomas has gone vegan.
Really? That monster?
Yeah, if he hasn't gone full vegan, because I listen to his show, and he is really working hard on it. Like, he's eating way less meat, and he's learning how to eat and cook vegan, from what I understand.
Really?
Well, I catch his video. I don't catch, like, the show other than if I'm driving. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it was a video, and it was just, like, 2-3 days ago. And because we're talking about it, I'm bringing it up. But I don't know. Maybe it'll hit me. But just somebody told me, especially in L.A., vegan food is finally, like, on point where – where, like for example, a gentleman like yourself would go, George, let's try this. I'd go and I'd give you a look like, don't ever do that again.
Yeah.
Now it's to the point where, like, if you go and you're bringing buddies, your buddies are going, hey, this ain't bad. Like, we're talking. Like, I'll see you in a week. Let's hit this joint again.
The
you know?
Best example I can give you of that is there's a place in L.A. called Doomy's Home Cooking. And they have a off-the-menu Big Mac there. So just Big Mac, just like you get at McDonald's, with animal-style fries. So that's the cheese, the bacon, the onion, but all vegan. And the whole place is home cooking. So it's everything from burgers to fried chicken to pastries to, you know, everything you can imagine, but home cooking style. I took Frank there, and Frank ate one of those Big Macs and declared it not only the best, and he's not a vegan. But not only was it good vegan, he said it's the best burger he's ever had. Mm. And so now anytime we're in L.A., he's like a little kid. I have to promise him that if he's good, we will stop at Doomy's on the way home. And we've even gone so far as to drive 2 hours across L.A. out of our way. You know what traffic's like
really?
In L.A.
Wow.
In the middle of rush hour traffic to go eat there. And he walks in the door and they start cooking extra food. Yeah, it's that good.
Interesting.
So next time you guys are in L.A. or
well, what part of L.A.? Can you tell me the
it's
cross
right
streets or
Paramount
freeways?
Paramount Studios, kind of right by there.
You know my dad?
Oh.
He actually almost blew up at Paramount Studios.
Oh, no.
He was working a job there, and I guess it was an electrical deal.
Is he an electrician?
No.
Or is that why he almost blew up?
It was a gas thing.
Yeah, he was overseeing a job there.
Okay.
For a contractor that he worked for, and I guess the Paramount Studios are sold that electrical and gas lines didn't match up with the plans, you know, that they had. And so when they thought they were maybe sawing into a one of the lines, or I guess addressing one of the lines, butchering the story here, sorry.
I know the story very well if you want me to take over.
Take over goes.
Paramount Studios, they have the blueprints. They had to cut a line, and they purposely looked, and on the blueprints it said it wasn't a gas line, and it was a gas line. So they, when they sawed it up,
yeah, but I'm thinking, why would they cut out an electrical line? But I guess they, say, I mean, they knew what to do safely.
When they cut it, it blew up, and they were like in a little tunnel. So my dad had to actually, the guy he was with was completely out. My dad had to crawl, pulling his him by his belt loop, pulled him out. Didn't even realize he was on fire until when he got to his truck. He was so nervous. He went to get a smoke, and when he brought his hand up to his face, he noticed that his hand looked like lettuce.
What?
And he had been burned.
Bad.
Fast forward.
What's the worst, fourth degree? I know he had one last third degree. Right? Yeah. He was messed up, man. His
they were underneath the Starship Enterprise, the set for that, and they actually blew that up. And then we got hate mail to our house like months later. Like people found our address or something.
Because
it delayed the movie.
I didn't know all that.
Yeah. I think mom still has it.
Really?
It delayed the movie by like months or something like that. And then they blamed us. And so we actually got like hate mail and everything for it.
Now,
he was at UCLA Medical for about a good 2 weeks. We would go up every day and see him and then come back down. But he got messed up pretty good.
Both of you guys were born at this point, I guess. When, so that was probably like around the early, when that movie come out, like 80 or something like that?
I was in like
appreciate
sixth
the compliment,
grade,
though.
I think.
Yeah.
Somewhere sixth or seventh grade. I was still in junior high, I think. Because I knew I couldn't drive. I know that. And we had that van, the old Toyota van.
And I could drive, so I had to be past 87.
Yeah.
Or 86 or
something. Yeah, it was like maybe early 90s.
Oh, okay.
Or 89 around there.
Oh, okay. Wow. Yeah.
We went down there every day.
How do we
saw
get on that?
Huh?
How do we get there?
He said Paramount Studios. That's near this place, this restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was pretty scary. But then his face, when it recovered, he had like the face of a teenager. Like he had like a Rob Lowe like complexion. Like if anybody looked at him, he instantly like, what's the reverse of aging?
Benjamin Buttoning?
Yeah, that he
like
did that.
Age regression?
So usually you'd go, what are you, 40? You know, and he looked like he was 25. I mean, he looked really young because his skin was he healed really nicely.
Yeah. Well, now he has the face of Goes. From the pictures I've seen, I think he looks like Ghost.
We look very alike.
Yeah. Did he become more like you maybe after the...
I think so.
Yeah.
I think the fire, like, something in the Gen X.
It might have.
Boom.
Man.
Lucky
guy. I'm glad he's okay. That's a horrific story.
It is. And you just reminded me of it because of the Paramount Studios, but I'll take it a bit further. Can I, or how are we doing? Yeah, our guest isn't coming up, and we can get off topic for just a second. So, all right. Obviously, this led into a lawsuit, and we're well removed from it. And interject again if I'm off here.
Yeah, because they're following the plans, the blueprint.
Right,
and they've got bad info.
Right. Yeah, my dad was messed up. You know, he almost died. He almost burned. He almost did a lot.
Right.
And at first, he didn't really pursue it. I mean, he just wanted to get better and work and all that, but. You know, after realizing he may never be the same, because the recovery took a while, he went to just check and see, I guess, if it would make sense. And, and so they said, we believe that you deserve a compensation for this because you got messed up pretty good. And apparently the guy that my brother just said was saved, he also did the same thing. In fact, I think he's the one that talked Dad into it, right?
I think so.
Yeah, and because Dad just didn't really want to do that. But, so then when it came down to, I guess, the final day in court, my dad didn't get anything. And it was because the other guy said whatever it took for him to get the money by saying, my boss, which was George, told me to do this. So he kind of like lied, I guess, when it came to the story. And so that guy wound up getting about $100,000, right?
A little bit more. And then do you know what happened after that?
Yeah, he died.
Yeah, he didn't have it for too long because I think it was a trip from Vegas back to California. He died in a car accident.
What the hell?
Like a karma thing, you know what I mean?
This is like a weird Twilight Zone.
And my dad didn't get anything. And we were like, geez, at least the hospital or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it was basically the guy changed the story and tried to point the finger towards my dad saying, well, he was the foreman. who said that we should do this or whatever. But when they looked at the plans, they noticed that the plans were just outdated. I guess there may have been an update to these lines that were back there. And so, therefore, what he was saying was correct. He's got a lot of experience in this, but, you know, they caused that explosion. I didn't know about the whole hate mail.
There was a scenario where I think the attorney had said that they had somehow told that guy, there is a way that you may lose the case and not get anything, or you can throw that guy under the bus and get less than what you wanted, but for sure you'll get it.
Yeah. He was faced with a hypothetical.
And my dad stopped talking. They were pretty cool, but they stopped talking. He got his money, and then he died not too long after that.
He made the devil's bargain. Now, my understanding is that the story gets worse because then the disgruntled Star Trek fans filed a class action suit against the Garcia family, which to me was completely out of line.
Pretty much.
I might have made the last part up.
That's why we're always like talking about Star Wars. We never mention
that's why I'm not really a sci-fi guy. Yeah. All right. Well, I'll tell you what's not fiction is looks like Dana's warmed to Conor McGregor versus Donald Cerrone again. This was a hot topic about 3-4 months ago, and then it went away. The same way it kind of – whoever wins that weekend in the lightweight division is the new person Conor wants to face. I think he went through it with Pettis. I think he went through it with Poirier. And now Cowboy's obviously got his hand raised again. And Cowboy says, look, I'll do it. But he's interested in making a title run. But circling back, are you guys interested in this?
I wasn't before. But based on Cowboy's performance, I kind of am into it now. And I'm kind of into it because other things can play out. And a little bit of order could be restored. So the same way we would always say, if you just take Conor McGregor out of the equation of any belts or anything like that and match him up with Nate Diaz, you have something that you could sell to the public and not disrupt rankings. Cowboy's going to kind of serve that purpose. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of into it now.
So that leaves Ferguson to face the winner of Poirier and Khabib?
Or you can make him fight Justin Gaethje, which, as I stated the other day, the UFC maybe they've signed off on Tony Ferguson. But I would say, if it were my business, you might want to put him through a camp and just see how all that plays out and have him show up for a fight, and show that he could do it before you put big money into him being in the spotlight again, especially if it's against against Khabib Nurmagomedov, who he hasn't shown up to.
Mm-hmm. What do you think? You like these matchups?
Totally into it. And I was into it, if we're talking about Cowboy and Conor, I was into it from the get-go when this started getting talked about, just simply because I think the promotional angle of it writes itself. I mean, Conor's the best active talker in the business, but I think introducing the homespun colloquialisms of Donald Cowboy Cerrone against the thick Irish bravado of Conor McGregor would be a PR bonanza for the UFC. I mean, those are the clips that, whereas the Conans and the Jimmy Kimmels and all that, whenever Conor has a fight, they always want to get Conor on. I could see these shows clamoring to get both these guys on. Hey, we got the one that the Irish guy, and then we got the other one that wears the cowboy hat, and, their cultures clash. And I think Cerrone, when he's challenged to rise to the occasion, could be a good crap talker too. Yeah, I love it.
Well, we'll talk a little bit about that when we come back to see if it makes sense and you guys are down, which it sounds like it is, where and when would you want that to happen? Plus, I also want to bring back a topic that we discussed earlier this week, and that's the all-time lightweight list. Now, Richard's going to be with us today and tomorrow, so maybe this is a homework assignment for you guys for tonight to have for tomorrow, but I want you guys to think about your top 10 lightweights, again, of all time. And that just goes for the UFC, Strikeforce, Pride, Bellator, everything, all the major shows, all the guys that have ever competed. So think about that. We're going to take a quick break. It's MMA Junkie Radio on Fight Nation, Channel 156. We'll be right back.
We are the nation of domination.
Fight Nation, domination, they go hand in hand. We bring the fight to you on Sirius XM, Fight Nation, Channel 156.
Their mantles are covered with participation awards. They have boxes of gold stars that they purchase themselves. They are the legends and demand your respect. Here are George and Goes.
A classic Game 7 is in the Stanley Cup playoffs tonight as the Colorado Avalanche take on the San Jose Sharks for a chance to move on to the Western Conference Final. Tune in tonight at 9 Eastern live on SiriusXM NHL Network Radio, Channel 91, and streaming on your phone and at home on SiriusXM connected devices and speakers. Look, I don't want to shit on hockey nor basketball because I'm a big basketball fan. And the hockey playoffs have been fun, even though the Las Vegas Golden Knights got... they choked away what could have been them, obviously, in this Game 7 versus Colorado. It was very disappointing. But I'm telling you, man, the two semifinals in Champions League were amazing. Wow. And I can only imagine what the people in those countries felt and all the fans around the world that tune in to watch those games. Barcelona had a 3-0 lead and went to Liverpool and lost 4-0. So even though the games were blowouts in each specific stadium, the aggregate score, meaning the scores combined, Liverpool won 4-3. So that's why that 3-0 game in Liverpool was exciting, because the 3-0 game from Barcelona carried over, and Liverpool won. Now, had Barcelona scored one goal, Liverpool would have had to score two more when it was 3-0 because of the away goal rule, which I know a lot of people are tuning out at this point, but that's what made it compelling. Now, Ajax, even though it looks like Ajax from Amsterdam, they won 1-0 in Tottenham, which is in London. They took home a 1-0 lead to Amsterdam. They went up 2-0 in Amsterdam. That means the aggregate was 3-0 Ajax. If you're a Tottenham fan and your star player Harry Kane is not playing, you're probably thinking, we're fucked. Mm-hmm. Right? And I think at halftime it was 2-0. Tottenham came back and scored three goals, but the worst thing about it was the last goal was in that injury time. So in a soccer game,
probably the last play,
the clock
too, right?
Never stops. All right, it's 45 minutes first half and second half. But the reason you'll see that little 2 or 3 or whatever on the side, it's called injury time. It's because let's say Richard's on one team, I'm on the other, and I trip him, and then Richard rolls 20 times to fake the injury. Well, while he's doing all that, obviously he's holding up the game, so the official will, you know, kind of stop the clock, or at least just know, well, that took 30 seconds. Get up, Richard, give you a yellow card for faking, or he gives it to me if it was real, whatever. But he knows that's 30. And then later on, you score a goal and you celebrate for 45 seconds. Well, there's a minute 15. And then a fan streaks across the field. There's 45 more seconds. All right, 2 minutes. So the first half, 2 minutes, we didn't actually play soccer. So he'll say 2, and you'll see a 2 on the scoreboard, and they'll play till 47. So now let's go to the end of the game. He adds 5 minutes to the end of the game. So those 5 minutes can take forever. If you have the lead and you don't need the other team to score a goal, you're just trying to, like in hockey, just clear it, or in basketball, just throw it to the other end of the side. But not, maybe not basketball is the right thing. You're trying to run out the clock. And in soccer, it's so much easier because you can just kick the shit out of it, and it goes to the other side, and then they got to go and get it and bring it back and build up again. It takes about 20, 30 seconds. And so that's what Ajax is trying to do. And Tottenham, you know, they're heading it back and forth, and they're kicking it, and everybody's looking at the watch. Everyone's yelling at the ref, blow the whistle already. And Tottenham throws it one more time, and a couple slick passes, and that Lucas Moura scores a goal. Oh, my God. I mean, I can only imagine that all of Holland was crushed. The whole country had to have been crushed because these games are massive.
I was
going to
ask you that. You think in England, I don't know that it's so much like once your team goes, you root for an English club.
I'm probably exaggerating.
But
Amsterdam's big, though.
I think maybe in smaller countries,
maybe
they do that.
Yeah, because there's like Feyenoord and Roda JC and all these other teams that are probably laughing because those are their rivals. But I'm saying the majority of Amsterdam literally had to have just gone to tears and been crushed because they were going to the Champions League final in Madrid against Liverpool, who had beaten Barcelona the day before. Or if you're just watching anywhere worldwide, or if you just bet on it, or if you're Tottenham, they've never been to this type of a cup final. That's something you may never see again in your life. It was really, really high drama, man. It was interesting. It was really, really cool. This happened a few hours ago. But I just couldn't believe they came down from that lead. At least Liverpool was at home, where they're beasts. But Tottenham did this on the road, man. That was impressive. You guys check out the highlights. I think Turner Sports is the one that is handling all that, so you'd have to go to maybe Bleacher Report or Yeah, Return to Sports, I guess, if they have an actual website. But anyway. All right, I got a list of events here. Connor, Cowboy. All right, guys, you're in.
In.
Where should they fight? I'm going to throw out a couple dates, and then you guys tell me if this sounds about right. Las Vegas, July 6th, UFC 239, headlined by John Jones and Thiago Santos.
No.
They don't need it, right? They don't need that.
I'm not. It's just you're never going to put John and Connor on the same card, I don't think.
And plus, do we need – technically, does it need to headline a pay-per-view? Do pay-per-view sales matter anymore?
That's another good question. But as far as ticket sales, I don't know.
Well, Vegas, they can charge up to like $1,800 for ringside or octagon side, or New York can as well. There's certain countries – sorry, cities where they'll take it that high. You couldn't do that like in Albuquerque. You know, you're just not going to get more than $300 for octagon side. But some of those other cities, it's no big deal. There's a hockey fight right now.
I think I might make the argument that that card could use a Conor McGregor infusion.
Really?
But they would never put those two on the same card.
Really?
No, I agree. I don't know.
Richard
that
Hunter.
They would.
They have John Jones versus Thiago Santos. Mm-hmm. Amanda Nunes versus Holly Holm. Mm-hmm. Francis Ngannou versus Junior Dos Santos. Mm-hmm. Jan Blachowicz versus Luke Rockhold. Sean O'Malley versus Marlon Vera. Edmund Shabazian versus Jack Marshman. I still got a good one coming. Diego Sanchez versus Michael Chiesa. George Masvidal versus Ben Askren. You still think it needs more?
I am in on all that 100%. Now, if you'll excuse me for a second, what I'm going to do is I'm going to step into the Mandalay Bay here, and I'm going to try to sell a random person a ticket to that, and then I'm going to tell them that we just added Conor McGregor and see if that changes their tune.
See where I'm going? Point. I see your point.
I mean, that's just the deal, you know, these days. Mm-hmm. With Conor McGregor is the last crossover superstar standing, surefire bankable guy in the UFC to that casual fan, I think, you know. John Jones isn't in that club.
August 17th, Honda Center in Anaheim, or September 7th in Abu Dhabi. Could it go there,
not
or do
Abu
you guys
Dhabi.
Really like the Vegas?
I could see Anaheim, maybe. But, again, I think it's a standalone card. I think you have to develop a card just for that fight.
Well, last year there was a show in Vegas in October, so maybe.
I think you have to build something around them.
All right.
I like the idea of – I'll tell you this. Either Vegas or Abu Dhabi, there's a lot of money there. You know, you talk about, like, selling a high ticket, you know, high-priced ticket for something like that. Because I don't know, and I know this leads into where we're going later on the show and everything with the pay-per-view sales, and does any of that matter as much anymore with streaming. But the thing is, I don't know what it's like to do business with Conor McGregor these days when you bring him back. How does this work?
Right.
Because the old version of that had a whole lot to do with pay-per-view points. So you may need to show him that there's going to be – he's going to be part of a card where there's going to be a
he
really
just wants a firm number,
pricey
right?
ticket. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you may have to meet a really
that may
number.
Have been what thwarted the Brock Lesnar return.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Eve Edwards. Eve Edwards is on the broadcast team for PFL. And remember, PFL kicks off 2019 on Thursday, which is tomorrow. So stay close. We'll be right back, and we'll talk to one of the best that ever do it in the lightweight division. Remember that. The lightweight's the theme. We're going to come up with some lists later.
They were abducted by aliens and instantly returned for raiding all their snacks. They are Gorgeous George and Goz, and this is MMA Junkie Radio.
All right, our next guest, Eve Edwards, fought all over the place. One of the old school UFC lightweights. At one point, he was the number one lightweight in the world. Now, he is a broadcaster for the PFL, and PFL is starting their second season. So it's called PFL 2019, week one. You'll catch Eve on the broadcast team, and he is joining us on the hotline. What's up, Eve? Welcome back to MMA Junkie Radio. How you doing?
What's up, George? I am still the number one lightweight on the planet, just the number one lightweight 42-year-old.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, I don't think there's anyone that would argue that one, so we'll give that one to you, buddy. How you been, man?
Thank you. I've been good. How you guys doing?
Good, thank you. So I got Goz with me as always, and we got Richard Hunter from Phone Booth Fighting Podcast as well. And we're anxious for the start of PFL. I think you guys did an awesome job last year, you know, setting up a regular season and One thing that really helped was these fighters fought so frequently, you remembered what they did 6 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, you know. And then a couple guys had to fight two times in one night. And then, of course, those million-dollar paydays. I think there was a nice buzz that carried over these last few months, even though it was kind of, I guess, technically an off-season for you guys.
It was an off-season. And, I like that you're still excited about it because this next season is going to be even better, you know. Especially, I believe, our opening event is going to be huge. I mean, we got a women's lightweight division, which is going to be anchored by Kayla Harrison, two-time judo gold medalist. You saw her a few times last season. But yep. The welterweight division is so stacked. It's so deep. We got four semifinalists coming back. We got two semifinalists from the middleweight division moving down. And then we have two new contenders in the weight class, Chris Curtis and Andre Fiallo, two really good strikers that Chris Curtis has been around for in the sport for 12 years. He's been a champion outside of the UFC for a long time. Andre Fiallo is 10-1. You know, his first eight fights were won by knockout, one loss to Chidi Njokwani. And then he came back and had two fights that he's won at Bellator. So I'm really, really excited, man, about especially the welterweight division. That's my favorite division in the organization right now.
What did you think of the promotion that you're involved with having an off season? Do you think it was good, or do you think any traction maybe got lost from December 31st until tomorrow?
I mean, you lose a little bit of momentum when that happens, but the way the organization works is there's so many moving parts, and at some point you have to pull over and refuel. You know what I mean? There's a lot of things that happen throughout the season, and guys need a break. It's not like the UFC where, you know, you're fighting with the number three guy is fighting the number eight guy, and then the next time he may fight the number 15 guy, but he might get a title shot. You don't know what's going to happen. No matter what happens in the regular season, you don't necessarily know who you're going to fight, but you get ranked throughout the season. So when the playoffs happen, you know who's going to fight who. And you know, and then you earn your championship spot. I mean, the matchmaking pretty much only happens in the regular season, which right now it's only two fights. As the league grows and the sport gets bigger, you know, that may change and may lengthen out the season. But I don't think we're going to lose too much momentum, because once we get back on the road and we set that cruise control again, we'll be back up to speed.
Eve, when you left Fox Sports, I'm sure that, well, that was probably a risk for your career. You know, you were very happy having, you know, Fox was in bed, obviously, with the UFC. But you decided to take a risk on PFL and NBC Sports. And, of course, I don't mean any disrespect to NBC Sports. I watch it a lot for PFL, and I watch it a lot for the Premier League in soccer. But man, you guys landed on ESPN. I mean, that's the leader. They've been around for a long time. Fox Sports, CBS Sports, NBC Sports, they all still have a few years of catching up to do. But isn't it pretty interesting how things worked out, and now you guys will be on ESPN, the ESPN platform?
Yeah, I'm excited about ESPN. I mean, the thing about Fox and the thing about NBC, especially NBC, nobody really watches NBC for mixed martial arts. People watch NBC for the Olympics. They watch NBC for the dog shows. They watch NBC for horse racing, you know. But nobody really tuned into NBC for mixed martial arts. NBC was good to us, and NBC was a lot of fun. They were good people to work with. Fox were good people to work with. I really enjoyed that. People tuned in. It was nice to have all that MMA content. But now, I mean, like you said, the worldwide leader in sports. Now, everybody wants to be on ESPN. Every athlete wants to be seen on ESPN. You know, you want to be on the top 10, on SportsCenter top 10, and all those different things that ESPN promotes in the sporting world. So, like, being there, this is huge for not only for the PFL, the UFC is at ESPN also. It's not only huge for them, but it's huge for the entire sport of mixed martial arts, man. I'm so happy because, you know, when I started doing this, and you know, you guys have been fans of the sport for a long time, you couldn't turn on your television and watch mixed martial arts. You had to have a satellite dish or have a friend with a tape, you know, a copy of a tape. Now, somebody's flicking through their channels. They want to watch some sports, and where do most guys go when they want to watch some kind of sporting event? They flick through ESPN. They want to watch even SportsCenter. You put that on in the background when you got stuff going on. But if you're flicking through the ESPN channels and you see some MMA and you're an MMA fan, even if you're not huge into the sport, you don't know a lot about it, but you just like fights, this is something that's going to hook you.
Yeah, good points. Eve Edwards, our guest here on MMA Junkie Radio. Yeah, he'll be on the call there. Sean O'Connell's been added. And, of course, they got Randy Couture and Bas Rutten. They have quite a team over there at PFL. PFL kicks off tomorrow night. You got fights on ESPN Plus starting at 6 p.m. Eastern, and then they move over to ESPN2 at 9 p.m. Eastern. Goes, what do you have for Eve Edwards?
Eve, a lot of times we get fighters on here that are competing at PFL, and we ask them what the adjustments that they made from season one to season two, things that they learned. What about broadcast-wise? Last year, there were times where there were four of you. There were times where you were in the cage. What are some of the things that you learned from season one as a broadcaster?
Oh, man. Well, it's been different. I mean, commentating, I had only commentated fights on smaller shows and then the Tuesday Night Contenders, Dana White's Tuesday Night Contenders prior to the PFL. Being in the PFL booth for broadcasting, it was a whole lot of fun. It was different. I had to get my feet wet, and I feel like that was the best way that I've done it so far. I had to learn how to talk to people as I'm watching the fight, to not just talk to people that know what fighting is. Does that make sense? Because when I'm at home, when I'm with my friends, when I'm with Mike Brown and Dustin Poirier, and I'm watching fights, or even with you guys are fight fans for so long. Even the fact that you've never been in the cage yourself, but you know the sport well enough that if I start calling out techniques, you know what's going on. Well, that's the thing. I can't necessarily call techniques basically what we call them in the gym, because a lot of these people that are now seeing the sport, you know, it's their first time. I start talking about Omoplata, and they're like, why is he talking about, you know, the chocolate factory and Willy Wonka? You know what I mean? So I have to break it down and bring people up to speed first. And that's the biggest thing that I've learned. Just not talking down to people, but making the sport understandable for people who are brand new to it.
Yeah, it's funny you bring up talking down to people, because my next question is somewhat along those lines.
You're going to talk down to Eve Edwards?
No, I'm not going to do that. But I've been curious of when you interview fighters the week of fights, and they sit down with you, there's a new generation that doesn't know you as Eve Edwards the fighter. They know you as Eve Edwards the broadcaster. Is that ever weird? Have you ever had that scenario come up? And have you ever had to check anyone?
Fortunately, I haven't had to check anyone. I don't know. Maybe it's because I still have a few muscles and I look like I may be a problem for them, and they know it's fight week and they don't want this kind of heat. But
and that wicked scar, too.
Yeah, I mean, that gets me a lot of play, especially with the ladies. No, I'm just kidding. But still. no, I haven't had that issue. A lot of these guys are young, but their coaches, that's really the buffer for that issue. You know, their coaches know who I am. So when their coach walks into the room, even if they don't know who Edwards is, even if they're too young to have seen me fight, their coaches either have seen me fight, or they've trained with me, or we've trained together, or we've competed on the same cards or something like that. So that buffer still exists. And now that I'm calling fights for the PFL, that the word will get out, you know, and the future generations, I don't think that will ever be an issue, man.
Mm-hmm. All right, Eve, we also have Richard Hunter co-hosting with us here from the Phone Booth Fighting Podcast with Frank Mir. Richard, what do you have for Eve Edwards?
Hey, Eve, you know, I've been a fan of your analysis for a really long time. I thought that, you know, every time you were on the Fox desk and that kind of stuff, that you were really a standout. So it was cool to see you join this PFL team. What I wanted to ask you about is, you know, this promotion really seems like it's here for the long haul. You know, I mean, you see new promotions pop up or whatever, and even when it's a glitzy package and stuff like that, you just kind of wonder if they're going to be able to hang around. PFL really seems to be growing season to season and progressing, which is so important. I was going to ask you, from an insider's perspective, was there any particular moment that, or a card or a fight or a production that you were involved with PFL where you maybe had that realization, like, man, this, you know, this is the real deal? Not that you weren't excited about it beforehand, but, you know, just something that was really an epiphany that made you realize that, you know, this company was really growing.
So something along the lines
growing.
Of a Bonner-Griffin moment?
I mean, it could be in the cage, but maybe it was just some part of some production or something, management, that you just saw, you know, the strength of the PFL.
That's a legit question. That's a really good question. I appreciate that question a lot. Here's the thing that stood out for me. It has nothing to do with fighting. It has nothing to do with what happened inside the cage. I mean, you guys, especially you guys, George and Goes, I know you guys have been around for the entirety of this sport. And we've heard a lot of promises. We've been promised all kinds of things in this sport. We've seen guys go home, go out there, bleed, just put it all on the line and go home with nothing. Why? Because the promotion and the promoters, they squandered money. You know what I mean? Everybody was promised $1 million should you win the championship. And everybody that won their championship, they got their $1 million. That, at that moment, that's when everything for me was like, this is real. This is it. You know, because even prior to that, every high-level guy that I had spoken to about the PFL before the championship happened, I mean, Dustin Poirier, George Masvidal, Mike Brown, everybody was like, you think they're going to be able to pay that $1 million? You know what I mean? But seeing Lance Palmer, seeing Lewis Taylor, seeing those guys get paid their $1 million, Sean O'Connell, like, everybody now knows that's real. So if you're not signed to a UFC contract, if you're not signed to a Bellator contract, if you're not signed to something tight, if you're not in contention for a title in one of those events, and you're on the shelf and you're having problems with your contract, guys are thinking, man, I have a 1-in-12 chance to win $1 million. I'm one of the best guys in the world, and UFC has me on the shelf. These guys are putting me on the shelf. I have one fight off my contract. I want out. You know, and the more visibility that you see for the PFL, the more people see that $1 million is an option for them. I mean, think about it. When you're looking at, like, the heavyweight division, we have some tough heavyweights, and these guys want to fight better guys. They want to fight the elite guys in the world. But right now, some of them are ranked, you know, the 20th ranked guy in the world, or the 15th ranked guy in the world, or I'm sorry, the 20th or 25th ranked guy in the world. And there's a bunch of UFC guys that think they can beat them, and they want to fight those guys. You know what I mean? But if, like, say Derek Lewis. Derek Lewis is a title contender. He fought for the UFC title. He's a very tough opponent. He comes into the PFL. A lot of people would think that a Derek Lewis would win the heavyweight division, but there are some heavyweights in the PFL that are like, nope, come on over here. You want this smoke, come and get it. And I want to see that. I want to see these guys fight the guys who believe they're the best guys in the world. Because the PFL is just going to continue to grow, man, especially if we keep moving in this direction. We're going to get the best guys in the world. The number one guy is going to arguably be with us in short order.
I like that question, Richard. I also had a few of those moments. I had a personal moment because I was in Long Beach and I saw Sean O'Connell's comeback. Mm-hmm. And so I just thought, wow, if I'm a hardcore and I've seen a lot, but if I'm feeling something, then I'm sure the casual fans probably feeling something. Then they had the night that Eve talked about, which was December 31st, six millionaires. The first one was Lewis Taylor and his family. Remember one little girl
that
was cheering,
yes,
and the other little girl was crying. And then he said, I got money for college for both of my girls, and the house is paid. And then let's go a few weeks later. I don't remember the exact date, but then ESPN comes on board. And I was like, wow. That was like a little two-month run that the PFL had that was tremendous for them. So
that blew me away when it was announced that we were going to be with ESPN. I mean, I didn't expect that, especially with the UFC being at ESPN. I mean, but then again, ESPN, I thought the UFC being with ESPN, I thought that was great for the sport, you know, because there's a lot of times the UFC doesn't want whoever they're partnered with to do anything with any other mixed martial arts promotion. But I love the fact that ESPN is the worldwide leader in sports, not the worldwide leader in UFC. So they're going to bring you the best mixed martial arts content on the planet. You know, if there's an amateur show in Dagestan, or an amateur show in Brazil, or an amateur show in Japan, and there's something amazing that happens, that's going to make the Sports Center top 10. You know, I mean, imagine, I'm like, man, I still went through on ESPN when I fought Josh Thompson. I would be on the top 10 of Sports Center.
All right, hey, this was fun, man. I hope we can do this before every show or every other or whatever. We enjoy talking to you on Fight Week, so thanks for the time as always, and please let us know if you're in Vegas. We'd love to have you back in studio co-hosting.
Hey, we're having our playoffs in Vegas. I would love to come into the studio for you guys when we're there.
Sounds good. All right, Eve, talk to you soon, my man. Thank you. Enjoy your evening.
Take care, George. Take care, Ghost.
All right, we'll see you.
Thank you.
All right, that's Eve Edwards. Follow him on Twitter @ThugJitsuMaster, one of the nicest dudes in the business. And remember, tomorrow night, PFL on ESPN Plus at 6 p.m. Eastern. Then they move over to ESPN2 at 9 p.m. Eastern. The main event, Kayla Harrison, two-time gold medalist in judo for the United States. She will be fighting Larissa Pacheco. That's right, the ladies, the women's lightweight division. That's 155 pounds. They now will be competing for $1 million. The co-main event is John Howard versus Magomed Karimov. We'll be right back. It's MMA Junkie Radio on Fight Nation Channel 156. It's the top of the hour break, so we'll be back in about 60 seconds.
Good, you're still here. The boys were just getting warmed up. Now the real show begins. Take it away, boys.
Richard, I've been meaning to ask you. I know that Motley Crue frontman Peter Criss?
Vince Neil.
No.
Peter Criss is the drummer of Kiss.
Paul Stanley is a big fan of Frank Mir.
Yeah.
When they came to Vegas, did you guys go?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
How was it? It was fantastic. Yeah. It was Frank's... I think it was like his first rock concert.
Okay. So he took it in and he enjoyed it. And I'm sure it helped that you guys have already gotten to meet the front man and all that.
Yeah, he loved it. It was Paul Stanley was my childhood hero. So the only thing that kept me from fanboying out on him was he is a huge fan of Frank's. So when we did that podcast with him, he actually invited us to his house, and we did it in his living room in Beverly Hills. And it was one of the greatest days of my life, to be honest with you.
So I had thought about going to that concert I think this is the third time, though, to be fair, that they've said, this is it,
yeah,
the last tour.
Right.
But I listen a lot to La Greca and Bully Ray, mm-hmm, and they're always talking about it. So they'll play it a little bit. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe I misjudged these guys. A lot of they have more songs than I remembered that are all right. But I don't know how long the tour is, and I don't know if that one really is it. And I thought maybe you might have some insight.
Well, they're gonna be saying farewell for a couple of years. It's going to be a tour that continues.
Got it.
It wouldn't surprise me if they come back through Vegas, or they're at least playing L.A. or something like that. Or they may even, you know, they've done a Vegas residency before. They did one at the Hard Rock, so they could do a stint of time here doing that. It'd be awesome.
Didn't we do Kiss Mini Golf on your birthday once?
Yes, we did. And do you know what you guys had there and you enjoyed very much?
Not
vegan
pizza.
Birthday cake.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Jennifer made that vegan birthday cake. Yeah. Yeah, but Kiss Mini Golf, which is at the Rio now.
Who was really competitive that night?
You.
I had an incredible score, and somebody swore they beat me.
It was Ricky Lundell.
Ricky Lundell.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
I had a lot of hole-in-ones.
Yeah.
And I remember having a scorecard going, wow, this one's going to be tough to beat. But it was Ricky Lindell.
Yeah, he's super competitive at everything.
All right. Who do we have goes on the hotline?
We got Nick from Washington.
All right, we're going to talk to Nick. And if you want to follow him, 877-FIGHT-93, 877-344-4893. I try to be one of those dudes that doesn't say it super fast, because that's a pet peeve of mine when I listen to other shows and they say it super fast. Let me try it again, and I'll slow it down. But you can follow Nick and get on quickly by calling 877-FIGHT-93. Or 877-344-4893. All right, let's talk to Nick in Washington. What's up, Nick?
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Good, man.
Hey, glad to see you have Ricky Rocket in studio today.
Hey, I'll take that one,
Richard
too.
Richard Hunter, thanks for coming in.
Could you give a few words
on the Frank Shamrock situation with the dog at the airport?
That's a great question. Yeah.
Yeah. This man. Okay. So, just quick backstory, I guess, if anybody doesn't know, it was on TMZ. I mean, it's 2 months back, maybe.
Yeah.
Something like
sounds
that.
Sounds about right.
I guess the story is that Frank Shamrock's mother lived in the Dallas area, and he had to go there and get her and take her out to California or someplace because she kind of couldn't care for herself. She had to be in some sort of assisted living, if I've got that part right. Anyway, she had a couple of dogs, and he was able to find a home for one of the dogs. He couldn't find a home for the other. So he left the dog tied to a truck at Love Field Airport in Dallas, and the dog was not discovered for a couple of days. And he was contacted by a local news reporter there, invested for animal cruelty, investigated, and he made the case that I put up on my Facebook page help. I'm in Dallas. I need a home for this dog. Can anybody help me? Nobody could. He made the case that tying the dog there, he felt like would immediately get it noticed by security. I got to tell you.
Let me add something to it, Richard, yes, and I'm not defending
no,
him.
No, sure.
He said that he, either in the bed or, tied to the truck, he said he left it plenty of food and water, and he said he alerted physically, not text, alerted physically to security and said, there's this kind of a situation over here, and you guys need to tend to it. You know, there's a dog. I don't know if he self-admitted. I did it. You know, he just said, hey, this is what I saw. Mm-hmm. And he said the feedback he got from them was like, okay, we're on it, you know. Mm-hmm. But in no way does that make it right. I just figured, I thought I should add that.
Well, you know what? I actually hope at some point, if he's not done talking about it, we can get him on Phone Booth Fighting to discuss this. Because and this is what I would honestly say to him, and I'm not trying to be a smartass at all. I would ask him, are you indigent? Like, do you not have enough money to, if you had a situation like that, board the dog? Put the dog in some kind of boarding, even if you got to fly mom out to California right at that. I mean, I don't know what all extenuating
that's
circumstances
were with
that. That's
what he made it sound like.
There
was an urgency of a flight that was leaving. But that,
fair enough.
That could have easily been.
Yeah. So I would say, delayed. I would say, you know, I would have boarded the dog, and I would have paid what that was going to cost until I could get this situation figured. Let me tell you something. And this is where I would call him on the carpet. I mean, he may have put that notice up for the couple hours between then and when the flight left or whatever. But in the example of Frank Mir, you have a Twitter following or a fan base like a Frank Mir or a Frank Shamrock. If you get the word out that you need a tire changed, you're getting rid of a bedroom set, does anybody want it, or I need a home for a dog, if there's more than a few hours notice, you're going to hear from a lot of people on that. So, and it's not like Dallas is out in the sticks. So the idea that I don't, by no means do I buy that he did everything he could do, because that's the case he tried to make. What he actually did, to your point, George, was create an emergency scenario where one did not exist before, mm-hmm. but, you know, hey, I tied this woman to the railroad tracks, but don't worry, I'm going to call security and tell them they need to get there before the train comes. No. So what I worry about with him, I don't know. I've interviewed Frank a couple of times casually. I don't know him at all. But the thing that worries me when I see a situation like that is that it seems like he just doesn't get it. Like, he doesn't understand all of the things that were terribly, terribly wrong.
I'm just not jumping on the flight, honestly.
No, me neither. But even if you're asking me, no, that would be my response. But even if you're asking me to understand, hey, come on, that's not going to be everybody's. Okay, but you're also not somebody that's living below the poverty line and, you know, making a minimum wage, I would assume. I mean, I just think that there's enough resources to at least temporarily handle that problem. I mean, especially, my God, Texas, you know how hot it gets? I mean, even in not the dead of the heat of summer or whatever, just either at the best case scenario, total benefit of the doubt, man, he is just not getting it.
I can honestly tell you, I would have boarded the dog, flew home with my mom, and then flew back to Dallas until I sorted it out.
Yeah.
Or if her health was okay, then I rent a room for a day or two until I sorted it out. I just could not leave a dog. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I mean, it wasn't his dog, but that was his mom's dog, which I just could not leave a dog like that. You know what I mean?
I'm glad this came up because total opposite side of the coin. I don't know if you guys saw the story about Jimmy Smith and his pit bulls. From last week.
We didn't take a job over it.
Frank and I just had Jimmy Smith on the
podcast. Formerly of Bellator?
Yeah. Okay. We just had him on the
podcast. On our channel, yeah.
Yeah, we just had him on the podcast today, actually. This will post tomorrow on Phone Booth Fighting. But the thing that happened with him was a couple of weeks ago, he was in negotiations with 1FC to do color commentary for them. Mm-hmm. But they're requiring all of their analysts to relocate to Singapore. Got to move over there. And Pitbull.
So Chevelle's got to move?
Yeah. That's what Jimmy said. That's what they're asking. But all of but Singapore has a ban on pit bulls. and he looked into it. He has two, and he two rescue pit bulls, and he looked into it to see, okay, is this like, yeah, technically it's the law, but they don't enforce it or whatever. Apparently there's strict enforcement, and he said, no, I'm not going. And he told us on the podcast today that his agent, he was very candid about it, and he told us that his agent told him, hey, you've worked for Bellator, you've worked for UFC, there aren't openings there right now. If you turn down one FC, this could start you on a downward spiral. Like, you could maybe not get commentary gigs anymore, at least ones that pay good salaries. He said, I don't care. He said, those are family members to me, and anybody that abandons a family member is a garbage person to him, and I couldn't agree more with that.
I think that would be tip of the hat to Jimmy. Yep. I heard only today on the way in, I was listening to Misha Tate and Ryan McKinnell. They had Sean O'Connell on the show. But somehow they talked about Jimmy Smith, I guess because maybe Andre will have the details. If not, if he can get it for me, that'd be great. I think they're doing a post show, him and Dan Hardy, this Saturday. So I imagine it'll be one of those from the end of the main event, Rose Namajunas and Jessica Andrade, until a certain time. I guess probably 2 a.m. or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Andre can fill me in. He just moved to Florida. Wasn't he a teacher in L.A. for a long time, aside from being a commentator? I think he had a gym, so he totally relocated his life. Did he mention that?
Yeah, you're talking about Jimmy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jimmy moved. He said he just fairly recently moved to Florida.
Oh, so, did he say why?
No.
Okay.
No, didn't.
But he gave up that job because of the Pitbull band. Yeah. Wow.
Now, I was going to say, I think the first question I'd ask Frank is, like, at any time, where do you have a dog, and were you ever attached to this dog? Because I would think, wouldn't you even take the chance of putting it in a shelter, and at least you have a week there or something? Like, there's so many things he could have done instead, right?
Right.
He said, and this is just the reports I've read because I haven't had a chance to talk to him, but he said that he had contacted shelters and they weren't able to take him. And I will give him that a lot of times shelters are getting called all day, every day, and a lot of times they really are just at capacity. But listen, if you, again, unless, and hey, if he's broke, he's broke. I don't know, but I'm assuming he's not. If you call somebody up and you say, either I need to board the dog, or how about this one? Hi, I'm Frank Shamrock. I don't know how many Twitter followers he's got, but I'll bet it's quite a few. I need to board a dog for a week. Can I tweet a couple of promos for your shelter on my Twitter feed? It's going to be seen by however many hundreds of thousands of people, and it will let people know that the dog is there. You see what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah.
There's plenty of ways that this could have been handled was not.
Nick has been hogging up the line so far.
His call just never ends.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think he's gone by now. That was a good question.
I'm glad he brought that up.
I'm glad he brought it up as well. I would say there's two things. For one, that was his mom's family, and his mom had health issues. I think he needed to treat the dogs like how he would treat a family member.
Yeah.
And I believe that there are places in every big city that will take the dog over leaving them at the airport, no matter what the situation is. That's just something you got to forecast a little bit better. If you're set aside 3 days to to unpack a house and then pack up a truck or a moving van or something like that, you have to do that. You cannot just leave an animal like that, man, in my opinion.
Do we know what happened to the dog?
Yes, the dog was adopted. The dog was, so days later, that's the other thing too. Let me rely on airport security to handle this in an expeditious manner. I mean, they've got all kinds of stuff they're dealing with. So once the dog was found, it went to a shelter, and that shelter posted the dog being adopted. It was adopted by an older lady, and so now the dog has a happy home and it's a happy ending. But you can't count on that. Mm-hmm. You cannot count on that, especially when you yourself have the means.
Real quick, the post show on Saturday, it's a UFC 237 post show here on SiriusXM channel 156, and it's hosted by Jimmy Smith and Dan Hardy. It's going to start right after the fight. The main event is over, and the pay-per-view starts at 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific. It'll end roughly around between 9:30 Pacific and 12:30 a.m. Eastern, and they'll go all the way until 2 a.m. Eastern, which is 11 Pacific. So it's usually like a 90-minute show. But it's basically when the last fight ends, they go. Now, that said, the reason I'm taking my time with this, the last pay-per-view, I think it went so long. It had a couple title fights. Remember the one in Atlanta?
Yeah.
It ended past 10 here, which it never does. But they didn't have the restrictions of the paper of the satellite provider. So that's why they were able to – I think they ended like at 10:20, which was 1:20. I think they just started the show earlier because they just didn't want to wait any longer. They knew they had an audience that is used to a certain time. Speaking of this Saturday, Goz and I will also be hosting a watch-along, a fight companion, whatever you want to call it. But we'll be calling fights and just hanging out here in our home base at Mandalay Bay on Sportscaster. Check out www.sportscaster.com/MMAJunkie. We'll be here and we'll be hanging out. We had a great time last time. We had a chat room. We had a bucket of beers. We had some parlay tickets. Some hit, some didn't, but we had a blast. So we'll be back here for that card that features Rose Namajunas and Jessica Andrade in the main event. Also Jared Cannonier and the great Anderson Silva in the co-main event. And how about the featured bout? Jose Aldo against Alan Volkanovski.
I'm getting more excited, actually. Embedded has gotten me into it a little bit more.
Yeah, that's money. Have you been to a show in Brazil?
No.
No? Okay. You don't have warrants, right?
No.
You can go to Brazil?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm clean.
Man. Yeah, no. I take one in one day.
Mm-hmm.
Brazil's pretty special. Mm-hmm. The fans, because that's a country where even if you're not the hardest MMA fan, hardcore MMA fan, you've been around it for such a long time. You know what I mean? And those stadiums are like rocking and rolling. So I don't know if you have a bucket list, but like I would say a soccer game in Europe or South America, but for sure an MMA event in Brazil. Now, that said, Richard Hunter, I haven't been to a UFC in Brazil. I've been to an MMA event. Mm-hmm. I happened to go down there and Betechi Combat. Remember Omri Betechi?
Mm-hmm.
He had an event there. And I actually got to see one of Ricardo Arona's last fights after he fought in Pride. And I saw him fight there. And that was just in the small...
Marvin Eastman, right?
Yeah. It was in the small little arena called Maracanazinho. And so it was really, really cool. Man, that's one audience where every little jiu-jitsu move is appreciated and clapped. And, you know, there wasn't no booing going on at all. And that was in 2009. The UFC didn't go till 2011. I remember coming back here and telling Goz, and I think Joey Varner covered for me on that one, or maybe it was Mark Lehman. I go, guys, the UFC is going to blow up in Brazil when they go, because this 5,000 little seat arena, they almost blew the roof off just for that one.
Two reasons.
You need to go too, man.
Two reasons I couldn't do that. This is where I would get in trouble.
I'm saying it like I've been. I need to go too. Go ahead.
Two reasons I would get in trouble down there is because I would not be able to resist pointing out to them, as I have pointed out to both of you at various times, my problems with the woo bobblehead chant, because that...
Oh, woo bobblehead?
That's what I hear. I hear woo
bobblehead.
I hear woo bobblehead.
Woo bobblehead.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There has never been an emptier threat in the history of humanity.
I agree.
That has been chanted thousands upon thousands
and
of
no
times, and it has not happened
and
once.
And let's say someone were to. Let's say Jose Aldo were to hit, God forbid, mm-hmm. Alan Volkanovski, and mm-hmm. something fatal were to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Do they seriously turn around and high-five or fist bump and say, I told you so?
I think they just...
I told you that's the way it was going to go down, playa.
I think they just modify the tense of the chant. It just turns into, you died.
I guess so, man. Mm-hmm.
I think
it
what
is an
they
empty threat. I think they just something along the lines of, I know this doesn't flow, but you're gonna die.
Mm-hmm.
Something about we got to shorten it to, you're gonna get your ass kicked. You're gonna get your ass kicked.
I think
you're gonna get your ass kicked.
I think it should actually be lengthened to, you are likely to lose a close decision on the scorecard. The other problem I would have down
hey, wait,
there.
Wait, do that chant.
You are likely to lose a close decision on the scorecards.
Yeah.
I don't know how you say it in Portuguese.
Can you make a chant, Goz? No. Say it in English.
Oh.
You are likely
to lose a close decision on the scorecards. You are likely to lose a close decision on the scorecards. Also, the other thing is, oddball observation, is you always know you're watching an MMA event in Brazil because when they cut to the locker rooms, they have those white plastic chairs in there, the ones they, like, sell at Costco.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and always. And I once asked Jessica Andrade why that was. I said, have you ever noticed that every time you're in Brazil, in the locker room, everybody's on those white plastic lawn chairs? And she had an interpreter, and she said something to him in Portuguese as to why, and the interpreter...
And then did she give an answer that lasted 2 minutes, but the interpreter only lasted 20 seconds?
Kinda. Yeah. And she gave me an answer, and then the interpreter said, because they are cheap.
Yeah, I remember when she was on the show, she gave longer answers, and I didn't have a problem with it, but I remember... Okamoto, what?
No, Tiago.
Tiago Okamoto is his name, right?
Tiago, he was the translator.
He shortens it. It's almost like,
he didn't got time for that.
Like Bitly, you know, on Hootsuite.
Yeah.
You just got a shorter link there. That's funny. All right, I think we got to take a quick break here. It's MMA Junkie Radio on Fight Nation, channel 156. You're listening to, we'll be right back. And also, this is Richard Hunter, our co-host. Check out his Phone Booth Fighting podcast. He's on iTunes. Him and Frank Mir dropping episodes for the last 5 years now.
No, not quite that long. It's been about 3.5.
3.5 years. Yeah. All right. You'll really, really love the podcast. Check it out. Subscribe. Leave them a review, just like the ones you've left for MMA Junkie Radio, Protect Your Neck Podcast, MMA Roadshow with John Morgan, and, of course, our partner, Ben Folks. He's got one, too. Call Me Event Podcast. We'll be right back.
You can now tune in to all of your favorite shows on devices equipped with Amazon Alexa. Just say, Alexa, listen to SiriusXM Fight Nation.
Okay.
All jokes aside, George and Goz are some of the best chicks I know. Here we go with more verbal sparring. Take it away, ladies.
Earlier we brought up Lesnar, McGregor, and there's another name out there that's just kind of floating. Please don't run with this to a blog or retweet me or anything. I didn't say it, all right? But I believe this comes from Ali Abdelaziz, who talked about what... And by the way, I think he's going to co-host on Friday.
Oh, okay.
Ali, he's going to be back.
How about he wears a suit? He always has nice suits.
Yeah, I'll give him that. He said that Habib might have an outline of fighting in September, which it looks like will be Poirier. December, which could maybe be anybody. We'll say Ferguson or Connor or somebody. And next April, which would be 3 fights in like 8 months. And then, as we all know, he usually takes May and June off because of his observance for Ramadan, the Muslim holiday. And that's a month long. So we, you know, it usually takes about, there's like a 2 month window on either side. You can't do a camp before the before there, and then he's obviously not going to camp while he's doing that. But that got me excited. Except one name that got thrown out there was GSP. Look, I'd love to see it, but I don't think GSP is going to make 155. I don't care what he says. I know he's on a water diet or something like that. I'm only excited if I get to see it at 165. Or if Habib says, I'm done with 155, I'm leaving the belt, and then goes to 170. Because if he's going to do the champ-champ thing, I guess, if he had that busy of a schedule, great. But just tell me which belt you plan on dropping after you hold them both up, if he can get past GSP. But no one's going to defend two belts. I don't want to ever hear that again. And I just don't like belts. I don't like divisions being held up. Go ahead.
Why 165? Is it because it gives GSP the opportunity to win 3 belts, or is it because it could bring in a new division?
No,
because
I want to bring in the new division. I don't care who does it at this point. I don't care if it's Connor. I don't care if it's Chael Sonnen. Whoever, you know, I just want the division. I think that division is going to blow up, and it's going to be so big that even Dana White will go, wow, I was wrong. And he never says that. I don't think he's ever said that in his life. Mm-hmm. But 165 could just be massive.
And the fight itself,
those
intrigues
divisions,
you?
I was looking at lightweight and welterweight. They got so much talent.
GSP intrigues you as a fight, or just because it's a guy who hasn't lost
well,
in a long time?
Well, his skills, if you think lost. About it, his fights weren't really that exciting. A lot of times you'd pay for the pay-per-view, and then you'd look around and go, well, what did we expect?
Yeah.
Just as Bruce Buffer was saying, all three judges have it 50-43. You know, they usually had 3 10-9s and 2 10-8s. And the other guy's all lumped up, just sitting there, you know, waiting for the presentation of the winner. And then GSP would get up there and turn red. Oh, I know I didn't get the finish or whatever. Mm-hmm. But that skill set that he has, that's not going to be as easy on Habib. Habib can wrestle too. You know what I mean? So that matchup intrigues me. Conor versus GSP, not so much. I think it'd be similar to Conor versus Khabib. Conor's wrestling's improved, and he's an amazing athlete. I've always said, if you look at Conor's body, I always use this one term. I know he's strong and lean and athletic and powerful or whatever. He's wiry. There's just some people that have this incredible strength, even though they're fit, they're really thin. Conor doesn't have, like, this huge chest or anything like that, but he's just wiry strong, and that's why he was able to mitigate some of what Khabib was able to do in that first couple rounds. Khabib tossed around Abel Trujillo, like, 21 times he suplexed him. And Abel Trujillo wrestled. I mean, it was Division III in college. That's still respectable. You know what I mean? That's still high school champs that wrestle at that level. And he was able to get it around him, but Conor was able to hang with him a little bit there. So, like I say, he's wiry strong, but he just can't stop that for five rounds. So that's why I think GSP and Khabib would be interesting. But do it at 165. Don't tease me with he's dropping to 155. And Khabib, he can go up to 170. But I think Khabib has a chance to really win, like, five fights and be the greatest lightweight ever. A lot of people might argue that he's the greatest lightweight already, but why not cement that instead of worrying about, you know, champ? Champ is, it's special, but it's, I don't know, I think dominate your division first.
The only way I would entertain that is if there weren't names behind him that I thought could beat him, and I think there's plenty of them.
Who,
Khabib has taken shots before in fights, okay?
Well, Dustin earned
a spot. Justin Gaethje
Ferguson needs to get a
could
shot.
Could probably hurt. A Tony Ferguson
Gaethje
could do
would be tough.
Like that.
Gaethje would be tough.
Dustin Poirier is tough. Like, I feel like there's still people. I don't know that we need to jump to these crazy matchups just yet. He's just not that guy.
And the UFC shouldn't be in a hurry anymore because, once again, are we in this era of the money fights? I don't know. This ESPN deal, is it true that they're getting 500? The equivalent of 500 pay-per-views with ESPN, like, that's sort of a payment?
What I heard was 400,000.
400,000?
But still, yes.
Why was that so appealing? Did they get that many shitty pay-per-views that didn't offset the good ones?
I think they just what would be appealing about it is the guarantee.
So they don't have to promote it. They don't have to fly around
they
don't have to have, like, a 10-city tour stop to promote pay-per-views. Because that's pretty expensive to put these guys on private jets. And now it's just like, okay, show up. And if we stack the card, great. And if we don't, don't give a shit over it.
I mean, they're going to promote it. Hopefully that's not the case. But I think they like the idea of the guarantee that they don't have to, it's not going to live and die by pay-per-view sales.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's hear Dan Hardy talk about it. Of course, he is on the channel now, part of the MMA Tonight crew, along with Misha Tate and RJ Clifford and Ryan McKinnell and AJ Hawk. Catch them Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. They're the show that starts right before us, 6 to 8 Eastern, 3 to 5 Pacific. Here's Dan Hardy talking about it might not be the greatest idea.
For me as a fan, absolutely I want to watch that fight. And I think GSP is a horrible fight for Khabib, just based on the fact that he's more attuned to wrestling for MMA from what we've seen in his career. And his striking is, I would say, you know, considerably more advanced than Khabib's. I love Khabib's style, but it is quite ragged at times. And there are opportunities with someone with such a high fight IQ and such good conditioning would be able to capitalize on that. And I feel GSP is he's got the kind of mindset that would be able to solve the Khabib riddle.
All right, so what he meant is not a great idea for Khabib, but he likes the idea of the fight.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I teased it wrong there just because I read what was left there for me. But anyway.
Do you believe everything he said, first of all?
Yeah.
Okay. Man, this is going to be a very unpopular opinion. And I don't mean any disrespect by it. But do you think that he has to say good things about GSP because he lost to him? Like, does that?
No. No, I think he's so far past that. I think he knows that it was just commendable to be in there and compete. And I don't think he even got finished.
He has nothing to say.
He has nothing to pump up the other guy to make himself look better.
He does have a good skill set, okay? But I think you're going to rely on his wrestling being better than Khabib's, which is what Khabib is best at, right? Again, I still feel like there are other fighters that can present other attacks that could give Khabib trouble. So I don't see the need for GSP right now. Other than we feel like he's going to be older a year from now and may never get him, something like that. But if you can't get Brock Lesnar to come over for whatever money he's asking for, I doubt GSP is going to be like, I'll take half. He's
but
probably going
to
want money,
can't go
too.
To WWE, Brock can.
But he's just done. Like, doesn't he just seem?
And
done
I still
to you?
Don't believe these guys have money to never work again. I really don't. Connor does, but I don't think. And Ronda does, but I don't think GSP does. And Brock does, but I don't think. Maybe those
are
the only
three.
That's
if they manage it right.
Right. Yeah, I still feel like at some point you got to pay still a lot of taxes on a lot of this money, and I hear so many stories of investments that just don't go well. If I see GSP doing something like Cormier's calling fights and he's got other businesses, you know, he's at the broadcast table like as a host. That's income. That's money. That's coming in. Yeah, I get that, but I haven't seen GSP doing
Remember
other
how
things.
Sick
he doesn't
got,
own
though?
A gym or nothing, and.
Like, the whole weight thing seems like it takes a toll on his body.
That's why 65. I don't want to see him at 55 for sure.
But, I mean, Dana's been adamant that he's just not going to do it.
I think Dana just – that's his way of negotiating.
Think so?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think Dana would have a problem reversing on it
for GSP.
Notice. Yeah, and I actually like the idea of that fight because it's like a dessert fight. I mean – I know I've got to eat dinner tonight. I don't have to eat dessert. That's optional. But, you know, every once in a while we have our fights at our meals, and then occasionally you get a dessert fight. And it's all those names that you mentioned, yes. I mean, those should be viable challenges for Khabib Nurmagomedov. But I really do think that in the – especially, you know, you talk about being in the money fight era. We're also in the interim era, you know, where everything's got to – everything's convoluted now. Well, you know, we're going to have this for an interim title where there wasn't one before, and there is no need for one. Why? Because there needs to be a title on the line. Same thing with champ type stuff. So, with all that being said, I think the conditions are perfect to make that kind of a fight.
All right. Well, we talked about one goat. We'll talk about another goat when we come back. Anderson Silva was on TMZ. He had some interesting things to say. So we'll touch on that when we come back. It's MMA Junkie Radio on Fight Nation, Channel 156. And we have Richard Hunter from the Phone Booth Fighting Podcast here in studio co-hosting with us.
Tiger, congratulations on receiving the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
This is Brad Faxon of SiriusXM PGA Tour Radio. Congratulations to Tiger Woods on joining an elite group of golfers as he has been awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
I just want to say thank you again. This is an honor. I know that I'm the fourth golfer to have received this award. The late Arnold Palmer.
Jack.
Charlie Sifford, who is, I always called him Grandpa because he was like the grandpa I never had.
Woods.
Tiger Woods is a global symbol of American excellence, devotion, and drive.
Continuing coverage is on SiriusXM PGA Tour Radio, Sirius 208, XM 92, and on your phone and at home on SiriusXM connected devices and speakers.
Thank you again, and thank you, Mr. President.
Destroy you. Just ask Three Finger Eddie and Pete the Penguin. Who are they, you ask? My point exactly. They are Gorgeous George and Goes. And this is MMA Junkie Radio.
Crank that song up, Andre. Old Hall & Oates. It's got a good beat and energy to it. Now, at some point, they became uncool and everyone made it funny, or made fun of them. And that sucks because at the end of the day, they still put out, like, original catchy music that people liked. It's just that you can't be cool forever. There's not too many musicians that are just nonstop. I mean, people shit on you, too. You know what I mean? But anyway, now when you get older and you kind of lose all that, you just find an appreciation for some of these bands that, you know, take a beating still.
You know who can make you cool? Who? No matter how dull you are. If you ever need to get back in the show business,
yeah,
talk to Geico. Geico can bring you back.
Really?
Yep.
Expand.
Don't they pull like Joey Gladstone out of a couch? Now all that's back. They can help you out. When did we ever talk about cavemen?
I feel like Saturday Night could
do it.
They
got a TV show off of it.
Saturday Night Live.
Are they the ones that had Europe performing the Final Countdown in a break room? Do you remember that? I think that was
Geico
commercial.
Maybe
Geico can save anyone, dude. Yeah. They made a gecko cool. A pig.
He is cool.
I like Max that. The pig.
Pig's cool. I even think Flo from Progressive is pretty cool.
She's all right, yeah.
I think she's more popular than a lot of actors from TV and the movies just because she's been around for so long. Like, if I saw her, I'd want to take a pic. I just think she's funny.
With Flo?
And I don't know anything about her. I don't know her real name or anything. I
need her to look like
I would
like
say,
Flo,
hey, look who I ran into, you know. I've seen her for so long, and she, you know, in these corny commercials or whatever. You're not feeling any of this, are you? You want me to move on to the next
one? No,
subject?
I'm cool with it. Oh. Hall & Oates. I like them because they fall into the category of a duo where there's one guy who, to most people, seems to just sort of be along for the ride.
Yeah.
Like Andrew Ridgely from Wham?
Andrew Ridgely. That is an excellent reference, sir.
Thank you, thank you.
Andrew Ridgely may be the ultimate other guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
We need to make our all other guy team.
All right. Andrew Ridgely.
You guys are feeling
what's
uh-huh.
this guy named? John Oates.
Aha.
Yeah, remember Aha? Uh-huh. They're technically
there's
three of them.
There were three guys.
Oh, there's
in
three?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's only one that matters.
Let me give you the OG other guy. How about Art Garfunkel?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, how about this one? This is a stretch, but I've caught them in concert a few times. And it's I have a terrible memory. Erasure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The singer's incredible.
Yeah,
he comes out with these corny costumes or whatever, and then there's just some dude that's playing along with him on the keyboard that nobody – because I think his name is Andy or something like that.
Yeah.
And the other guy is just there, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas, like, the Pet Shop Boys, they both kind of sing a little bit. Yeah. I think it's Chris and Neil or whatever, but another guy along for the ride.
How about the captain from Captain and Tennille?
That's a sensitive subject here with us.
Why is that?
Remember when we got ripped for the whole Captain and Tennille thing with our friend from Pennsylvania?
What was that? What happened? Remind me.
He passed away, and people were making a
That's right.
So we made a list of captains that you should give a shit about.
Okay.
And we put him behind Crunch and who?
Yeah, we had a buddy that didn't take too kind that we were joking. Not joking, but you know when people die in threes?
Yes.
It was like Prince Michael Jackson and the captain from Captain and Tennille. Yeah, we were like, no, we need someone else to die to lump it into, to lump them into like a powerful group of three, you know, because they really do die in threes.
He was like the death to be named later in a blockbuster trade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
Oh.
And so we joked and he was like, and they said something like, their music just meant a lot to me. So then we had to back off because it's like, well, we're dealing in a death and if that's the way you're taking it, okay. But I stand by whoever he was lumped in there with. It was like powerful figures. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Wow.
The third one was like Sam from Different Strokes.
I mean, did you guys lose any sponsors? Was it like a
boycott? No, it was a listener friend of ours.
Okay.
It was a listener friend of ours who just. I don't know.
I would have liked to. The
it's when it's over text, it sucks because you know in person you can do the old.
Text.
You can do the old. come on, stop it. Let's get a beer or something like that.
Across
and here, I couldn't tell
anything.
If somebody was really, really offended.
Yeah. Well, okay. That might be a good opportunity to review the finer points of the Captain and Tennille catalog. You know.
Yeah.
Did he appreciate more their cover of "You Better Shop Around" or was it? Muskrat Love.
No, but
really
interesting enough, he's a real big vinyl collector, just like you are. You guys would have a great conversation. Yeah. And if you ever saw his collection, you'd probably tip your hat. It's impressive. He was on a show called
Crate Raiders.
Yeah, and even those guys are like, damn, you bring it. Like, cause he's got a really, really cool man cave. And,
I would be interested in that.
Yeah, the only thing I didn't like was when Crate Raiders were there, he went through his top five songs. This is my buddy Sam Alljam. And then they counted them down. And when he said five, I was like, yup.
Uh-huh.
And then they got to number four. I was like, oh, yeah, I'm feeling that one. Number three, number two. And then when they said, and what's your number one song? And he played some song I'd never even heard of. I was like, oh, man, that was like anticlimactic for me. I didn't like that number one. But
any Captain and Tennille on that
top five? It wasn't Captain and Tennille. I would have preferred it was Captain and Tennille.
Okay.
But, yeah. All right, Anderson Silva. Anderson Silva feels like the UFC is misusing him. I don't think he realizes he's 44 and he hasn't really won a fight. Or I guess he beat Nick Diaz, but they took it away. He's between no contests and losses. He's just not the same since before Weidman. when they threw him into the Nick Diaz sweepstakes and he fought Nick Diaz, this is a guy that never fought at middleweight. Or if he did, it was like a one-timer. He had to have accepted at that point that these are the kind of fun fights he would be in the rest of his life, right? Mm-hmm. He can't be asking for Romero or anyone else. Mm-hmm. He got Bisping once. He got Derek Brunson once, and that's fine. Those are tough middleweights. One of them went on to be a world champ. But I don't know. I'm not sure I understand his point. But he was on TMZ, and we got a couple cuts from that. And when you hear the first one, after you hear the first one, you'll go, Anderson, what do you expect in here if you're saying this kind of stuff? Let's play cut one here from Anderson Silva on TMZ.
Wow. So I believe in this fight is a very interesting, you know, for sport, for the fans. But that's the good question for Dana White, you know, because Conor accept a challenge. I accept the challenge and just waiting for the opportunity, you know. Let's go see, you know.
How can he feel the UFC's misusing him if he wants to fight a Conor McGregor fight? A guy that's fought mostly at lightweight, or really featherweight, more than lightweight, but we'll call him a lightweight, versus a guy that's fought at middleweight and actually dabbled in some light heavyweight. To me, it just seems like he knows it would be an easy fight. That's why he wants to fight him.
It's just too clear that all I want is money.
Or that, too.
And this is a guy that, for the longest time, built everything off of, I'm a martial artist, I do this for the sport, the love of martial arts. Now it just seems like, man, just give me some money.
Mm-hmm. And cut number two is what he would say to Dana in regards to super fights. Let's hear that one.
So, come on, boss. Give this show for the fans, you know. Give this show for the big fans in UFC, you know. Is it two big guys, two big names, you know. It's good money for you, Dana, and good challenge for me and for Conor. I believe in I cut my weight for 180. I think McGregor check your weight for 180. And that's the good fight for me and Conor. You know, that's a good experience for the fans. You know, especially the fans for the sport. You know, it's a super... super, super fight, you know? Anderson Silva and Conor McGregor.
Do you want to see this fight,
no.
Richard Hunter?
No.
There's just nothing appealing to me about it.
Anderson and Conor?
It's two weight classes apart. I would just then say, well, why don't you want to fight John Jones? What if Jones wants to drop to 200? Would you meet him there? Or I mean, I don't know. It just seems like he's picking off something that's too easy. And he already did it once with Nick Diaz, but at least that was only one weight class difference. I don't know that I want to see this fight versus Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor still feels like he can be a world champion at lightweight. What the fuck is he fighting Anderson Silva for? And plus,
too much weight.
I think we're out of the money weight or champ wait money fight era with this whole ESPN thing. So we don't need to have like this killer show that sells a lot of pay-per-views. With UFC already got themselves a great deal. They just extended a deal that tripled the Fox deal on ESPN. Within 2 months, they added two more years to that one. So imagine how well they're doing.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. Will he retire after UFC 237? This is Anderson Silva in Cut 3.
No. You know, I have a trio of four more fights in my contract. I'm training hard for finish that. Of course, my partners in my company, Spider Kick, talked to me to... about time to stop and take care about my business, about my company. But, you know, I'm very excited. You know, I'm very excited. I'm very happy. And I go to finish my contract. You know, I have three or four more fights in my contract. I go finish my contract.
Who do you want to see him fight?
If I'm being serious with you, I don't want to see him fight anymore. I don't think there's anything left to prove.
What if he beats Cannoneer?
I don't care.
He went the distance with Izzy.
I still don't care. It's going to destroy his legacy. I don't think.
No, he's still being called a GOAT despite all these losses.
I think if we had a serious conversation of who the GOAT is, I don't think he's in the talk anymore.
He's not the GOAT for sure.
Right.
But
there aren't GOATs. There's just a GOAT.
Well, but he's in GOAT talk for some.
For who? Brazilians?
he comes up and gets eliminated quickly. Have you ever seen Miss Universe? Or no, Miss USA. 50 girls come out, right? But within 5 minutes, they go, 38 are going home. Here's the top 12.
Yeah.
He's one of the ones that I think already goes home. You know, and then we go, now we got Bones and GSP and Cormier.
But then you look over at that guy and go, well, why did we do that?
I don't know. Ask Miss USA why they do that. You know, but in this case, he's one of the ones that gets talked about. But right away, if we're down to a Mount Rushmore, a top five, he's still in a top 10.
All right.
You know what I mean?
I think that any mixed martial artist who gets to that elite level, headliners among headliners, people who fight so long that they get to a point where they cannot remember the last time they did not main event, right? The question they have to successfully ask themselves, and this is threading the needle, is when their skill set diminishes past that point, they have to be okay with, all right, I can still fight. I can apparently still win a fight or two here or there. But I'm not going to main event. Am I okay being a co-main event? Am I okay being a feature attraction? And I think in that sense, Anderson Silva still has tread left on the tires. You know, maybe he beats Cannoneer. You know, maybe he takes Izzy the distance or, you know, whatever it is. But I think those expectations have to be measured. I think he's got to realize that, all right, this isn't getting me back to a title reign. This isn't getting me back to headlining pay-per-views or whatever.
But I'll just cash some big checks that I can invest, you know, for my kids and my businesses. Maybe introduce the UFC to a certain part of the world. But, yeah, you're right. All right, you're going to be shocked who I think he should fight when we come back. And we also got the Daily Bait. It's MMA Junkie Radio on Fight Nation, Channel 156.
Put excellence and excitement in your Vitamix. Add ice and you get MMA Junkie Radio.
Tonight at 10:30 Eastern, the Houston Rockets duel with the Golden State Warriors in Game 5 of their conference semifinals matchup. Catch all the action on NBA Radio, Series 207, XM86, and streaming on your phone and at home on SiriusXM connected devices and speakers. Go Rockets! All right, now it's time for the Daily Debate.
The brothers Garcia seemingly can't agree on anything.
Everybody knows it's duck season.
Rabbit season.
Duck season.
Rabbit season.
Whether it's food.
Less filling.
Tastes great.
Less filling.
Tastes great.
Gambling.
Always bet on black.
I like red.
Black.
Red.
Black.
Red.
Black, dummy.
Or even social media.
Instagram.
Snapchat.
Instagram.
Snapchat.
The same applies to the biggest stories in MMA. Time for MMA Junkie Radio's Daily Debate.
Today's Daily Debate, question for the at MMA Junkie Radio team. After Dana White said he'd love to have him, do you think Jordan Burroughs, who just beat Ben Askren in a wrestling match, will ever fight in the UFC? Yes or no, Goes?
I'm going to go with no. I think if he wanted to fight in the UFC, I think he could have done this sooner. And I think it's just a little too late for something like that.
He said he wants to have one fight and Dana wants to have him. What do you think, Richard?
Oh, yeah. I think that'd be a fine opportunity. I think he, especially now with the Askren storyline, comes with some cachet there. Because I think Ben Askren has caught on great. I mean, how many years did we play that out before he finally got to the UFC? And that looks like that's been anything but a bust. So I like the idea that now he comes in with that cachet with Askren that's pre-existing helps.
They wrestled, now they do MMA?
Yeah, but even if whether or not they get matched up, I just like the idea that he's got that storyline to bring him in. When somebody says, who's Jordan Burroughs, you can go, hey, well, you know that Ben Askren, everybody's digging? All right, well, here's what happened there.
Does this open the floodgates for other athletes from other sports going, I want to try it once?
What's happening in judo, right? We've seen it happen in judo. But, I mean, when people go, who's Jordan Burroughs, wouldn't you rather them say, one of the greatest wrestlers that ever lived, than to say, that guy that tried MMA and got starched?
I wish he would have committed to the 3 or 5 fights. I wish he wouldn't have said the one
and I don't
out,
want to see him for one.
Because if it opens the floodgates, I don't know. Sometimes the UFC does that. But, hell, I think it's going to happen. I think
you
it
do?
Really will. Yeah, I think it will.
I think he's going to go to a gym. He's going to get hit. Or he's going to take a leg kick and he's going to go, I kind of like where I'm at.
All right. Well, the voting was close. 57% said no. 43% said yes. And there you have it. There's today's Daily Debate brought to you by the MMA Junkie Radio team and Richard Hunter from the Phone Booth Fighting Podcast. All right. Our time is up, guys. Eve Edwards, thank you very much for your time. We'll catch you on PFL tomorrow. Richard, you're back tomorrow, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool, man. All right. Check out Richard and Frank Mir, the Phone Booth Fighting Podcast. Download them on iTunes. Subscribe, I should say. And catch them as they drop their shows. They've been doing this for about 3.5 years now. Leave them a review as well. It really, really helps the iTunes algorithm. Do that for us. We would like to see some of those reviews as well. So for Andre and Richard and Goes and Don McBride from Kansas, I'm George. Have a nice day and go out there and be a champion.